If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Want to teach your kids financial literacy but not sure where to start? Greenlight can help. With Greenlight, parents can keep an eye on kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens use a card of their own to build money confidence. As a parent, you can send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and more. It's a convenient way to run your household, customized to your family's needs, and the easy way to raise financially smart kids. Get started with Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/pod.
Welcome to Eye on the Illini. This is Illini guy, Mike Kegley. I'm here with Matt Stevens, the Illini guy's staff writer, and Kedrick Prince, the Illini guy's director of recruiting. We are in the dog days of July. It's probably one of the quieter times that we run into in this job. Usually it's nothing but short sprints as we go from one thing to another, from football season to basketball season to transfer portal to AAU basketball to, you know, and next thing you know, you're back at football again. So we've got a few topics we're going to talk about today. First off, and we'll have kind of a little round table between the three of us. Matt, what are you looking to see? You know, we're a couple weeks away from football starting. What does Brett Bielema want to accomplish in that camp before the season starts? What are you looking to see? What are you most curious about?
Who's going to catch passes? Because I have, I mean, it's the biggest question is wide receiver. I mean, they have such a lack of depth at that position, especially on the outside. And Brett Bielema and George McDonald, specifically the position coach, and essentially Brett Bielema's right-hand man on key decisions throughout the program. They have a lot of questions with this. Is Brian Hightower ready to go? If he is, then, you know, how much is he ready to go? Because last year he suffered that injury that just set him back the whole way. And is Casey Washington a reliable guy on the outside enough to, you know, feel good about? Is Kamari Thompson ready to be a wide receiver instead of just a sprinter, a track sprinter? Is Sean Miller going to be able to help you as much as people seem to think he might? Is there anybody else that, you know, I think it's Sean Morris, the kid from, you know, Toledo. Can he help you? The seventh year senior, can he help you? There are a lot of questions at that position group that I've got to get solved to make Tommy DeVito look a lot better and to make this offense look a lot better. And quite honestly, make Barry Lenny's first year at Illinois look a lot better than it could be if the wide receiver remains a question mark.
Now, one question, I'm going to direct this to Ked, and then we'll talk about his concerns. Ked, you know, you're a big Isaiah Williams man. How much your defense is going to be loading up on him when he's clearly the best, at least on paper, wide receiver that the Illini have?
Well, here's my answer, and I'm glad you asked that. I kind of, you know, when Matt mentioned his name, I was like, okay, Matt stole my thunder. Casey Washington had to step up. I mean, you know what I'm saying? They, you know, Isaiah is going to be, if they just throw the ball to him, because I think the offense is going to look a little different this year, they're not just going to throw the ball all over the field. But you saw some exciting new things with Isaiah where they got in the ball, where it's kind of tough to double team him, I guess. But that's the key. You know, Casey Washington, you know, this isn't, he came to Illinois as a receiver. You know, you have to have other guys step up at that position, because if you have other guys step up, the run, in my opinion, the run game becomes a lot easier. I know that's old cliche, but it's true. You know, you're not going to be able to throw. And, you know, here's the deal. Isaiah Williams isn't 6'2", or 6'3", 6'4". So, you know, yes, he's fast. And, you know, when he gets out in the open, it's great. But I'd like to see some passes, you know, thrown out to the flat, you know, to him and to, you know, to, like I said, Casey. But they're not just going to survive with just throwing the ball to Isaiah, because, one, he's going to get hurt. It's a long season, and the Big Ten is very physical, and I don't want to see that happen to him. So other guys, and I agree with Matt, they have to step up.
So what are you looking to see, Ked, from this team when they get prepped for the season? What are you going to be curious about?
The Beatles' number one quarterback to begin with right away. No offense to Art. You brought a guy in to come in and to be good and to be different. I would like to see them name a leader early to establish their depth chart. You know, early, I know last year Matt and I were struggling trying to find the depth chart. I know that's tough to get from Illinois at times, but just to establish themselves, this is a second year, you know, don't have to second guess yourself. You know, I want to see improvements. I want to see guys who last year, look good, but I want to see guys become better. One guy we talked about last year so many times and was a mystery man was Shamon Cooper, you know, highly touted kid coming out of, you know, St. Louis. You know, it's time for these kids to step up a little bit, to be difference makers, because everybody's going to matter. You know, I did a podcast with a guy who covers the University of Iowa recently, and he made a good reference to me about the talent that Illinois is picking up and that he predicts Illinois to go to a bowl game. And the reason I bring this up is because I think people have a different perspective outside of what some Illinois fans have, because, you know, the transfer portal, especially the quarterback position, I think was huge. That was a position that they had to address, in my opinion.
So, Matt, a question for you is, this team, you know, we know we got a pretty good idea of what the offensive line is going to be. We know that the running backs are talented and fairly deep. Is this team going to have an offensive line that can force defenses to cover run first and maybe give some help to a weaker, wide receiver core? Are they going to be good enough, to move the ball on the ground and maybe give DeVito a crease to throw to out in the flats one-on-one?
I think there's enough talent there. I tell you what, Alex Pilstrom really surprised me at center in the spring. I think he took that job and really, really ran with it and essentially won it out of spring. And I thought that was really impressive for him to do. But there's a lot of pieces that have to be figured out, and you're losing a lot of guys. You're losing Doug Kramer. You're losing Vidarian Lowe. Poucha coming back for his sixth season is a big deal. And he helps you either at right tackle or at guard. And so there's ways to do it. If there's a couple of JUCO transfers that you saw in the spring that can possibly be added into this mix and be ready to go. If Isaiah Adams is ready to be a tackle, that moves Poucha to guard, that helps you out. I think Julian Pearl will be a lot better than he was in the spring simply because he doesn't have a club on his hand anymore. He can actually use two hands instead of just one. And so that'll be an interesting battle. But to answer your question, no. I mean, they're not good enough to just bully people, I don't think. And I don't think that they're built to do that as much as last year's offensive line, let's say, was built to do that. But I do think you have guys at the tight end position in Luke Ford and Tip Ryman that can help you in the run game as much as they can in the pass game. But, I do think that this – I think the premise of your question was where I kind of wanted to go, which is – I do think Brett Bielema at the end of the day is going to look down at his team and go, the best – thing that we do is run the football. And I think that's Barry Lunny's not trying to get fired, right. So, throwing it 45 times a game for Illinois is probably a ticket to lose against pretty much everybody on your schedule. So I think everybody kind of gets into the season excited about what Illinois could show that they didn't last year. And one of the reasons they didn't is because they're not very good at it. And if they continue to do things they're not very good at, they're going to get beat. Yeah. So I think running the football is going to be a major staple to what this offense is and how they're going to win football games. And I think Barry's going to be really creative in how they figure out how to do that. But I do think that their Illinois needs an answer for 3rd and 5 and 3rd and 6. And I think that's during fall camp, I think, which they've got to figure out.
Yeah. Well, let's ask Ked and then we'll round around to you. Ked, Luke Ford signed his WWE NIL deal, so he's ready for that. Maybe he can help Kofi get in if Kofi doesn't play pro ball. what can we expect out of Luke Ford? Because you don't run into a lot more physical talent than what that gentleman has. Can the Illini coaches, you know, can they do the right combination to unlock him?
You know, well, coming out of high school, which we all know, he was one of the most highly touted recruits in the country. I mean, the kid went to Georgia, so you know how good he was or is. You know, and when you see him, you know, when I guess on TV, you know, it does him no justice, but when you see him in person, he's a big specimen, big legs, big shoulders, put together, hardly any body fat. The kid's just a big specimen. I think for him, I think it's reps. I give the kid credit because he does compete. He wants to win. He doesn't cry and complain a lot. A kid, in my opinion, you know, based on what he did coming out of high school and college is different. I understand that. Yeah, trust me, I really get it. But you know what? There was times where people thought the ball should have been thrown to him a couple of times, but then he dropped some passes as well. So it's time for him to mature a little bit, to be a leader. You know, like Matt mentioned, him blocking a little bit, you know, for the running backs, he needs to be effective. I think he's too good of an athlete to not be. And, you know, I know last year there was talk about him in the NFL because the talent's there. So, you know, hopefully there will be a quarterback this year that can throw the ball to him, that it won't go 10 miles over his head or, you know, 10 feet, but, you know, below the dirt. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I remember last year, I don't remember what game it was, but when the game's over toward the fourth quarter, you get to go on the field as a media guy. And I, you know, I'll never forget the game where, and Matt, you know, and maybe Mike, you may remember, it was a crucial play and he threw the ball literally like 10 feet over his head and you should have seen his face. But as a player, Luke Ford's face, that's tough because, you know what, you want a quarterback, and I think that's going to be the key to get the ball to them. He's not going to be perfect. I get that. But they need guys to just – they need to make routine plays. And I think the tight end, you know, which is what Iowa uses in Wisconsin, if I was Illinois, I would live and die by that, especially, as we mentioned earlier, if you don't have a good receiving core, why not use it? What was it? I remember when COVID the first year, when Illinois went to Wisconsin, I don't remember. I think their tight ends probably have 250 yards against Illinois. Why not do – you know, why not utilize that body if you have it?
Matt, what are your thoughts on that ever-elusive tight end production that we used to take for granted when I was a younger adult, but now at Illinois it's been tough to turn, you know, a good tight end coming into college into good production when he leaves?
What position did the athletic director play again at Illinois?
Exactly, at tight end, yep.
So Ked mentioned the word when it comes to Luke Ford, and that's maturity. Okay, let's not. I mean, with all due respect to Tim and Lisa Ford, and they know this because they raised Luke. The first thing that that Luke did to endure himself to the Bielema era was oversleep the first day of fall camp last year and miss practice. So I'm guessing he'll have a better day one than he did last year. But that set the tone for everything that happened with Luke, and it was like, are you really going to try to, you know, half butt your way through this whole season like you have before? And I think that that's what the coaches kind of asked him. And he continually got better week in and week out after having what I thought was a really disappointing fall camp, and almost to the point where Tip Reiman was at a position where the coaches felt better about putting him in a game. Luke's NFL potential has everything to do with when, you know, he takes his, like when they do the cattle call at senior day in Mobile and they take your shirt off, they walk you in your underwear and they measure you. That's going to be how everybody gets impressed by Luke Ford, because his tape right now has nothing to show NFL people what he can do. And, you know, I don't know if you can put that all on the quarterback for no other reason than the Los Angeles Chargers backup quarterback might be Brandon Peters. So there's an idea here that like Luke Ford needs to take it upon himself and actually be a really, really good player. And he's not in this, I mean, I think Tip's going to get a lot of snaps, but he's not in this position battle anymore like he was with DJ Barker, and splitting time that way. But yeah, I think the tight end position is going to be key. And if I could add one more thing is that, it's the one thing that I thought Barry Lenny was hired to do, because that's what he did at Arkansas. Hunter Henry was made a hell of a Pro Bowl career in the NFL because his position coach was Barry Lunny at Arkansas. under Brett Bielema. Daniel Sprinkle became an unbelievable tight end in the SEC after being a 2 or 3 star recruit, because Barry Lunney put him in situations in their offense as their position coach, and Brett Bielema ran a pro style offense at Arkansas that got him the football. So I do think that they're going to, again, these guys aren't trying to get fired and they're trying to win football games. I think it's a really, really good position group from Illinois, and Barry is going to utilize the best players that he can out on the field the best way he can. And when you're going to run the system that he runs, you know, you're going to want to supplement the run game with something. And I don't think that they want to take the tight ends off the field a whole lot, because I think that helps the run game on first and second down, and it probably can help your pass game on third down.
Now, I used to like, when I lived up in Minneapolis in the Denny Green era, he used to run the 2 tight end, 2 wide receiver. And just, you know, he had tailback, now former Ohio State tailback, Robert Smith. But he liked to, I guess Terry Allen was there too, but he just, you just had to for running plays, you just had to follow where the one running back was to figure out where the ball was going. But they had a fearsome offense with 2 talented tight ends. Matt, do we figure to ever see a 2 tight end offense coming out of the Illini this year?
Absolutely. I mean, again, if you don't think you can put multiple wide receivers out on the field, why would you do it? And if you think you're more comfortable putting multiple tight ends on the field instead of multiple wide receivers, why wouldn't you do that? You know, I mean, again, coach speak is sometimes coach speak for a reason. We're trying to put our best 11 guys out on the field in order to win a football game. And sometimes I do think you're going to see, you know, 12 personnel out there, which is 2 tight ends.
Yep.
You're going to see, you know, even – hell, the barge package is 3 tight ends, you know, and it's essentially a blocking tight end, whether you want to use, you know, one of the offensive linemen, you know, like, Josh Kreutz or somebody else in that position. So I don't think that's going away anytime soon, because that wasn't a Tony Peterson created thing. Let's just be real about this. All right. So, yeah, I mean, I think it helps you. A lot of people think that it encloses and claustrophobics your offense, and you're not spread out as much, but it also makes you have to figure out, do I cover that tight end with a safety or a linebacker? And Illinois can pick apart that matchup. And if anything, Barry Lunney proved in week 2 last year, he can pick apart a defense. It's pretty good if you allow him to have matchup problems. And he did that at UTSA and walked away with champagne with a win. So I do think this offense is going to look a little similar in stylistically, but schematically, I think it could look a little different. Specifically, they're going to run a lot out of the gun, I think, than they did last year. But I don't think the idea of who they're trying to get the football to changes all that much, because the guys that you trust from last year are mostly returning.
Okay. Ked, if we're going to, you know, ask you to predict something, is Mr. Randolph going to go through the season on our defensive line and stay away from injury and use that ungodly good talent to help the Illini for 12 games?
You know what? That's, you know, this is coaches speak, you know, that's the key. You know, kids, players, they have to be healthy. You know, we talked about this on our radio show, you know, when we did our round table discussion. You know, you need guys to be healthy. And you're right, Randolph has to be, because the situation is this. You know, if you're going to have key players missing, let's just say, for example, you know, you asked earlier about Isaiah Williams. He's the go-to guy. He's a deep threat guy. You know, Matt has made it really obvious that there's just not a lot of depth there. And I don't know if Illinois has enough depth as a team to continue to replace key position players. And Randolph is one of those guys. So my thing is, if they can stay healthy, and it's hard in football. Basketball, I won't say it's not as, you know, tough, but in football, a fluke injury here, a fluke injury there, and a kid could be out for 4 or 5 weeks. And, you know, I know we're never going to get the full end of the report until the end, but honestly, I don't think the roster is as deep as it was last year. I think there's some talented players, probably more talented players, but I don't think it's as deep. Like, I just don't think they're in a position to where they can lose people and then continue to try to win and go to bowl games. And, you know, yes, injuries happen to everybody. I know people are going to say, well, you're making excuses, because it is a part of it. But I think Illinois' roster is just not deep enough yet. I think in another year, I think they could lose players, a player or two, and then not be hurt by it.
Matt, which one of the Brown twins is going to have a better season this year?
Chase. I mean, there's no doubt about it. He's the number one tailback in a Brett Bielema system. He's coming off a 1,000-yard season. I mean, I would pencil him in for 1,000 yards again. But I think Sydney's going to have a good year at safety. Don't get me wrong. Yep. But I think Chase is the guy that I think you has to be your bell cow at tailback. And, I don't know what the depth chart's going to look like at tailback. I have news for Ked. He ain't going to see one in the preseason again this year. I can promise you that. So we can forget that noise today on July 18th. But I would assume Chase Brown's going to be at the top of the running back depth chart. And I'm interested to see how different ways Barry Lunny can get him the ball.
Right.
Because you can get him the ball in a traditional sense. And he had two 200 yard games, one against Charlotte, one against Penn State last year. So he can do that. But if you wanted to throw him some screens and you have athletic offensive linemen, and I believe you do, that can get out on the perimeter, I think that would be beneficial. But the simple answer to your question is I think Sydney's going to have a better year than he did last year, because I think Sydney got caught into was one of the weird guys that actually it took a while for him to kind of adapt to Ryan Walters' scheme, yep. What he wants out of a strong safety. But once he did, I thought he was really, really effective and got a lot of help from, Kirby Joseph and Quan Martin on how they wanted things to be done. I think Sydney's going to have a really good year in his senior year, but if Chase isn't very good, Illinois is not going to be very good on offense. So I think it's Chase.
Well, let me ask you guys this. What do you think? I know last year, there were some games where, Josh McCray just, it looked like the Hulk, versus Spider-Man or whatever the case may be. He's just a big specimen. Do you see him getting a lot of playing time in the backfield this year?
I do. I think he's going to be the number two guy. The problem with Josh is that, one, I don't think he was, and I'm not saying this as he's, when I say maturity with Josh McCray, it's not the same maturity that I was using with, say, Luke Ford. He just wasn't ready to play. He wasn't ready to accept the workload in the opener against Nebraska, and that's why you didn't see him as a true freshman. Once he got adapted to the idea, and it's hard for kids, Ked, you know this in any sport, it's hard for kids to start to believe that they're good enough to be a dominant force as an 18-year-old and at the college level. Once he got a taste of that, especially after the UTSA game, especially after the Purdue game, I thought he was going to just basically explode. And then he got essentially a lower body, muscle injury, or lower body kind of quick twitch injury that kind of halted his deal. And it was fine because Chase was able to pick up the ball, but I do see them as a thunder and lightning kind of tag team kind of at running back. And I do think that he could build off of his freshman year and have a really, really good year. I do like what I see out of him in his sophomore year. And I think he can not only build as a 19, 20 year old on what he did last year.
Yeah. His off season training is visible because, as Ked said, he was kind of scary physically, as a freshman coming in. And now you look at him and you can certainly see that Tank Wright is earning his keep as a strength and conditioning coach for this Fighting Illini football team. And McCray, I not that I ever wanted to get in front of him before, but it's even less likely that I get in front of him now. And yeah, if I do, I'm just going to hand the pizza right to him.
Yeah, I don't think he was ready for a 4-month, 12-game season. Guys.
I agree.
That's the easy way to say it.
Yep.
And I don't know anybody in the world that could have expected him to do that. But I thought if he builds off of the flashes that you saw, again, like at Purdue against UTSA, what he did against Maryland in that game, there was about a 1-month stretch where you thought Josh McCray might be in the mix for like Big Ten Freshman of the Year.
To be honest with you, he had a couple plays. Now I say plays, not games, not season, but he had a couple plays that was remarkably Marcus Dupree like.
Yep.
It was just a couple amazing plays, and you're like, my gosh, this is a true freshman doing that. The difference is Marcus could do that. Take 4 weeks off and show up the week of a bowl and then end up, going for 250. you know, on limited carries because he was tired.
Yeah, again, we're talking about two guys in Chase Brown and Josh McCray, guys who didn't take one snap in the opener and Illinois beat Nebraska. I still to this day have not figured out how Brett Bielema figured out how to do that.
That's coaching.
Yeah, yes. And you know what? It's coaching on the visiting side too, in the bad way.
Yeah.
But I think you're talking about two guys that could definitely be a really, really interesting tag team in terms of the term. And they're going to be needed too, because as Ked said, it's a long season. And Chase is an all world guy again. Like, you know, when NFL teams want to look at him, you know, when they weigh you and put you on a scale, like, and figure out how much your body fat is, Chase Brown's going to be one of those guys that impresses the heck out of these scouts, just from a body standpoint. But it's really, really hard to get through a 12, 13 week season anymore, especially in this league. And when you have two guys like that, and then you can pierce off what you want to do with maybe a third back, whether that's Aiden Loffrey, whether that's Chase Hayden, or whether that's Reggie Love. It's going to be interesting. But no, I do think the Chase Brown, Josh McCray tandem is going to be used and used frequently at Illinois this year.
Oh, so now let's pivot. We'll go over to the basketball side. Ked, what's the schedule look like from a recruiting standpoint? Where are Coach Underwood and the assistants going to be here in July? What are you hearing?
Well, I know I'm going to Chicago myself personally. I think what they're going to do, they're not spending the time at all these places, you know, for 3 and 4 days. I think they're going to hit all of them. I know they're going to be in Atlanta. I know that's a big one, the EYBL. And the one in Chicago that I'm going to be attending is an Under Armour event. So I know for a fact they're going to be in all those places, because this is the last week really open period. So they can make these offers, and kids that, you know, they were debating, well, do I offer this kid, don't I offer this kid? They can make those decisions. So I know that they'll be in all of them. I know all the coaches will be out. I know that for a fact, you know, and they'll probably be seeing different faces, different places. Cause sometimes, you know, the players, you know, they all talk to the assistants, but it's always nice to see Coach Underwood. And that's the thing, seriously, that I've noticed in the last year and a half or so, if that makes any sense. Coach Underwood's been out on the recruiting circuit a lot more than he has in the past. I mean, and sometimes when you get a chance to talk to these kids, they'll tell you that. Like, one example, when you talk to a kid being recruited by Michigan State, Tom Izzo name comes up all the time. Now I hear them with Coach Underwood. So if I call and talk to a recruit, hey, who's recruiting you? It may be Chester Fraser, Jeff Alexander, or Tim Anderson, but then they'll throw in, hey, I talked to Coach Underwood. So him getting to all these events, it's nice to see. And I don't know, you know, I may be totally wrong for saying this. I know he had knee surgery, and I know he was hurting before, and he told Brad Sturdy and I, our colleague, a few weeks ago, that he feels great and it was the best decision he ever made. So maybe that has something to do with it, but he's out there now, and it's good to see him out there with, you know, with the big boys.
Yeah, they've got Peach Jam coming up as well. The interesting thing to me is I find it mystifying to figure out exactly how I would approach, let's say, the 23 class, because we really don't know who's coming and who's going next year. So you've got an idea that you're going to need, you know, Hansberry, let's say, you know that. But, you know, I mean, you could do a scenario where the only person who leaves is Meyer when he graduates, or you could go to another scenario where, you know, Illinois has a fantastic Final Four run, maybe wins their first national title, and Terrence Shannon's going pro, and Meyer's obviously going to go pro, and who knows, maybe RJ or Hawkins goes pro, and you know, if you want to go pie in the sky, Sky Clark's knee feels better by January and he goes pro. So, I mean, it's amazing to me how these coaches have to kind of lay a groundwork that's much wider than maybe what they had to do in the past. And then they have to just kind of see what happens. Matt, what do you think about this new world?
Go ahead, let me comment real quick on that. You know what? You're right. You mentioned the class of 23, and I think what's going to happen, I think because you know, Matthew may be the only kid that technically could leave, even though I'm sure there'll be others. There's no secret that Imani Hansberry is the guy that they want in the worst way. Coach Underwood did tell us he's not just going to put a kid out there on the roster, just put him out there. Illinois is past that state. So to answer your question, I think if that happens, I think they're going to go to a transfer portal. I think they've been very successful at it. And I think because it's not a good class. And I think if you're good in the transfer portal, you better be good in 2023, because you can talk to any recruiting guru or any coach. It is not deep, which is why Illinois is recruiting Hansberry so hard, because there's just not a lot out there. Sorry about that.
No, that's fine.
So I was going to ask you pretty much the same question, Ked, is that what's the motivation for them to be out there right now? As an outsider, I'm observing it kind of going, I know you guys are just going to recruit the portal once it opens up and there's 2,000 kids in the portal, you know, every year. You've made that real clear. What's the motivation to be out there other than, I guess, what Bielema was kind of doing with his staff, which is, hey, guys, start looking at 24s, start looking at 25s, you know, and start putting files together on these kids, because we're kind of done with 23. Like that's not going to be an issue for us.
Matt, buddy, you just answered your own question. And yeah. I don't know if Brett Bielema and Brett Underwood are talking, but it's just not a good class. And I think what they're doing, and if you look at it, some of the things we put on our site, a lot of the focus is focused on the 24 class. I mean, you have James Brown. He's a kid that's being recruited by everybody in the country. That class, the 24 class, not just in the state, but in the country, it's loaded. So there's a lot of good talent out there for them to be able to pick and choose from the 24. But I think right now the whole key to this, for them to be successful, they got to put the time in that class. I don't think, you know, like I said to you, in 23 it's going to be there. You know, they got to steal with Maurice Johnson. You know, if he wasn't an Illinois commit in 24, this kid would have 24, 25 offers as well. You can talk about another kid in 24 who, you know, I posted on our board. I wrote a story today. I think he's the third best player in the state is Nojus Instratus from St. Rita. He plays on the team with Maurice Johnson and James Brown. Instratus, I don't know. He pronounces it, we all get it differently, but he's a nice shooting guard. So I think they'll get a lot of focus on him, because you're going to lose some kids in the portal. To the portal, to transfers. You're going to. So you're going to have to, you know, stay aggressive. So, you know, they have to be out there, because in 24 and 25, another kid, I mean, like, I know that's a few years away, but the fierce kid. This kid just picked up an offer from Iowa, and Ohio State's calling. And so, I mean, there's an Underwood, which I can honestly tell you, and I talked to the family, the fierce family. Underwood was the only Division I coach sitting front row to watch this kid play a couple of times. So let's check out with him. Even though I know Michigan is begging for a commitment, he's a 25 kid. So they're out there, but I just don't think the 23 class is going to do what people want it to do for them.
I think the interesting thing is it's Illinois has a role that's evolving now. And really what they need is that they need that big NCAA run, and they need to have continued success in the vein of IO in terms of the NBA. You put those two things together, and all of a sudden Illinois will be in will be able to parachute in on some bigger players too, because, you know, if they go, let's just use, you know, Sky Clark as an example, not that this will happen, but let's say he does play well and goes pro this year or goes pro as a sophomore. 2-year player goes to the NBA, gets a first round draft pick or high second round draft pick, and they go deep into the tournament. Now all of a sudden, when Brad Underwood, you know, calls you because the transfer portal and he's got some people going out, you know, as a high school senior or junior to be, you know, going into your senior year, you're like, hey, maybe I will. Or you even get the kids who hold off until the spring to see what's going on. Now Illinois is going to be able to compete at a higher level, I think. But they need to have a couple things fall, which is tournament run. And it would be nice to see somebody go into the NBA in the first round. Think about it. Illinois had the best record by, what, 3 games over the last 3 years, you know, better than anybody else in the Big Ten, and a whopping 1 player has been drafted off of those teams.
That's what's going to separate. I really think, here's what I think I'm 100% sure Illinois advances to the Sweet 16, the Final Eight, and gets a player selected in the first round. All the negative things you hear about Illinois from a national standpoint, I think they're going to go away. Because what they're going to do, they're going to go back and they're going to think about how he built the program. They're going to see the success. They're going to talk about Io, who was a player that was obviously underrated when it comes to NBA draft terms. So getting in that second round, and I'm going to tell you guys, and I'm really blessed to say this, having an opportunity to talk to those coaches is great, because I'm telling you, that is a goal. They want to advance, and they know it builds their resume, and Illinois deserves to be there. They've had the team. If you really think about it, for the last 3 years, you know, the COVID hurt them 1 year. They've had the team the last 3 years to advance, and, you know, people are going to say I'm crying again, but I tell you what, Houston was a tough draw the second round. Illinois wasn't playing well either. I don't know if they would have beat, you know, a junior high team in the second round. They just weren't playing well. They weren't gelling. But honestly, I think if they're going to advance and if they want to, you know, to build their program to where it should be and where it belongs, you got to advance. And the NBA talk, it matters, because kids talk and coaches talk.
Matt, did you have anything?
I think we're dancing, or at least I'm listening to Ked, and we're all dancing around the same thing, right? Like, we're like, Sky Clark's got to be good. Like, and I don't mean like good. He's got to be really good. And the reason so everybody kind of saw the thing that was on Twitter, right? About, you know, the plates thing with Adam Flint. I don't know. Maybe I took that as, aren't y'all Dallas protesting too much that Sky Clark's not hurt, right? Like, and I keep hearing when we talk to Underwood, and Ked knows this, like, we get Underwood in a group setting and he goes, no, he'll be fine. We're just not going to push him that hard. And I'm like, cool. Like, but if he goes out there and he's not as explosive as he once was, and I'm like, that's going to be a problem. And the reason it's going to be a problem is because that dude has to be good as you want him to be. Otherwise, you know, that puts a lot of pressure on other guards. And then, oh, by the way, that puts a lot of pressure on everybody else that needs to play off the guy that's going to have the ball an awful lot. And so, I mean, I think Illinois is going to be really, really good if he's really, really good. If he's not really, really good, boy, that puts a lot of pressure on Jaden Epps and some other people if he's not really, really good.
Yeah, normally I would agree with you, but boy, this year with you know, Shannon, Meyer, RJ, you know, Ty Rogers, you can really look at a matchup and say, you know what, we're going to have somebody else bring the ball up. I think they're going to have a little bit of an opportunity just with their positionless basketball. I mean, that's such a weird term now that everybody uses for everything, but I think they're going to have a chance to really pull a power forward out 25 feet from the basket with a guy from Illinois who finally will have a guy with superior quickness out there. I think there's a lot of things that this team will be able to do that just a year ago, Matt, I would have agreed with you, you know, and, but obviously if you've got a point guard that you can depend on who can create their own shot and also get them for other guys, you know, you're going to be in better shape. But I do wonder with this positionless basketball, will they be able, you know, one of the best ways to break a man-to-man press is go, okay, let's see, I've got five guys who can handle the ball. So get me the biggest one and have him bring it up and let the other opposing guards, you know, they're going to be guarding my guy who's not dribbling, and we'll bring a big guy out and see how they can handle that.
Another concern with this, Matt has mentioned Sky Clark probably four or five times, and I got to be honest, I'm starting to see where he's coming from a little bit more, because here's why. You remember when Illinois went to Indiana last year, how Illinois played, and the game got close, and Indiana is one of the toughest places in the world to play basketball at. You know, you had Trent Frazier who bailed you out. Illinois goes to Michigan State, another tough environment. You know, when those teams make those runs, or you remember what Purdue was like last year, that's tough for a freshman. I don't care if you're the number one player in the country.
Oh yeah, I agree.
I think that's going to be tough. So to me, how well he does, and I'm going to be paying close attention to it because I do think Matt's right now, the more I think about it, what they do in the non-conference schedule. It's not going to be the same, you know, because they're neutral courts. But when you go to those arenas, because, yeah, it's we could have Coleman Hawkins, who, you know, I think can have a great year, and Terrence Shannon, but they're not really point guards. And what happens if a team puts a bunch of guards out there and you force Terrence Shannon to be a point guard against pressure? I don't – that's not his natural position. That's why I've always said before, I wish they would have had not necessarily a power five point guard, just a veteran guy in the back to just – who's been there before and been on the road in tough environments. But you know what? We have to give the kid a chance because I do think he's special. Talking about Sky Clark, I think he's going to be good. I know having a guy like that can shoot it. And I think, you know, with ACL injuries, a lot of kids – it's mental with them. And I know Fletch is trying to get that out of his head because truthfully, sometimes that's how you get hurt again, by trying not to get hurt.
Yeah. My thought is that it's such a cliche thing. We can all talk about how Illinois is back. And look, they won a Big Ten title last year and they are back. But when's the last time Illinois got a top 10, top 15 national player? So from a perception standpoint, you need that top 15, top 10 national player that you recruited to be good and to be good essentially right out of the box. Because if he's not, then there's a thought of, well, I'm not going to go there because Sky Clark went there and, you know, his perception. It's not even develop. It's his perception. It took too long for me and I'm not patient enough to deal with this crap. You know, Duke and North Carolina and Gonzaga, they play freshmen and they excel right out of the box. So I just think this kid has to be really good for so many different reasons, let alone – and, Mike, I know you coached at the AAU level and so did Ted. I'm not worried about a guy bringing the ball up because I think Illinois could play a game where four guys could bring the ball up and get you across the timeline. I've never really been worried about that as much as once you get across the timeline, do you have somebody who's running things that makes you look like you know what the hell you're doing, like – and get you operated in the hell you know you're doing. Because in the college game, the shot clock becomes an even bigger deal. Because if you're scatterbrained and you have no idea what you're doing, then things get real, real like worrisome. And you're throwing up contested 18 footers, like, because you didn't get in your stuff. So
yeah, I think it'll be really interesting to me to see, like I said, if Illinois gets in one of those positions where you got a 6'6", 6'8" guy bringing the ball up, will they decide to go over the top? Because one of the things that I think is what, like, Golden State shows you on the court is there's some times that they have a possession that nobody dribbles. It's just pass, 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 shot, done. You know, and I just wonder if they'll be able, you know, if Illinois, you know, again, that's asking a lot. But Underwood is a big one. If you watch his old SFA films, those teams push the ball up court, you know, and it wasn't just dribble up and, you know, like what we've seen with Kofi. I think it's going to be – I'm excited to see what it looks like different. I'm not saying they're – I don't think they're going to necessarily – their ceiling may be higher without Kofi, but certainly their basement is a lot lower. You know, Kofi guaranteed you 20 and 10. So you may not win a lot in the NCAA, but you're going to win 20 to 22 games no matter what. And this year they don't have that safety net. And I think the tougher schedule – I think it's going to be a lot like a Michigan State team of 15 years ago, where they have a few losses in the preseason against some really good teams. And then you see them learn and get on a roll later in the season and maybe do a little better. But let's face it, there's a lot of good teams out there. And if you don't play well, it doesn't take very long to get out of the NCAA tournament. Just ask Iowa.
Well, Mike, you know what? I was – you know, summer vacation, so I have a lot of free time on my hands. So I'm watching Illinois and Ohio State last when Illinois lost at home to Ohio State. And I remember that was a game Coach Underwood got thrown out of the game. And in the last 5 minutes, Chester and Tim and Jeff put on this presser. Brad Underwood, he was loving. Tell you what I noticed. You know, Coleman, I'm going to be honest with you. I've talked to Coleman Hawkins about it a little bit before. The one of the things that he didn't like, I know he did not like, was just bring the ball down the court, throw the ball to Kofi, run a few off-ball screens, and that was it. The reason I say that, there was time, because you mentioned about how the offense is going to be, there was time last year where they were forced to throw the ball to him. And in that particular game, he didn't deliver. Because if you remember, A.J. Liddell blocked four or five of his shots. If you don't have to throw the ball to him and run that offense, it is going to look different. It won't look stagnant. They were forced to do that. And I think by not doing that now, I think they're going to be tougher to guard. You know, I'll tell you the game, people really want to see what Coleman Hawkins could be like. And while he's on the NBA draft boards, go watch the first round of the Big Ten game when they played Indiana. We had 18 or 19 points. He was 4-7 from three and 4-5 rebounds. That's the kid that you're going to see that you guys are both talking about when you got a 4-5 on the perimeter who can take the ball to the basket and he runs the floor well. And he does not get enough credit defensively. I've watched the last, you know, couple of days of his games. He's a long kid, and a hard kid to shoot over. So I think personally, you know, when you take a step back and you look at it, you know, yeah, the point guard is going to be important. I get that part of it. But I think if Coleman could be half the player that everybody thinks he's going to be, Illinois is going to advance. I think he'll make players around him better. I hope he grows and mature. Because I know after every call he didn't like, I hope not to see that anymore. Curbelo did that a lot. I know that's something that the staff is working with him on. Show that maturity.
Yep, I agree.
If it's going to come out of Coleman Hawkins now, it's never going to come. Like, let's just be real about it. Like, if it's never going to come. And if it does, here's the other thing that I'm really interested in. If it doesn't come from Coleman Hawkins, Mike already mentioned it. There's a kid named Ty Rogers that's probably going to start on the bench that will immediately take his minutes, and nobody's going to feel sorry for Coleman Hawkins when that happens. Because that kid mentally, emotionally, and physically is ready to play right now. I'm positive of that. Like, and it's the most intimidating, unselfish kid I've ever seen in Ty Rogers immediately from a mentality standpoint and how he looks at basketball. Like, so, I mean, if it doesn't come now for Coleman, it's never going to come. And like, that's the key. But like, I'm interested. Like, I think Mike said it best. Like, he's mentioned these Michigan State teams that, like, I don't know, like, what do you like, start 8-5 or something? And
yeah, and then they end up, you're like 8-5. They're gonna suck this year. And then Illinois fans go, it looks like Izzo's dead. And it's like, guys, why are you saying that?
I'll use a better example. Does everybody remember what Michigan looked like before Christmas last year? Like, and it was when they were going down to Vegas and damn near giving up 100 to Arizona. Like, and everybody went, holy, that Michigan can't guard anybody. Like, they're not, when they're losing the game that Juwan Howard slapped Joe Crabbin off, like that, they gave up almost, I think it was almost 90 points to a Wisconsin team. And like, you know, the reason they're still pressing is because their half court defense still kind of sucked at that point. Like, and then Michigan got their act together by the end of the year. And oh, by the way, they had three NBA draft picks, if you count Hunter Dickinson. And it's like, oh, well, yeah, we can out talent you by the end of the year. I mean, I think that's the road that Illinois might take, is that I think before Christmas, Illinois might look kind of like really scary in terms of like scaring Illinois fans into thinking that this is
going they'll be afraid, Matt. Trust me.
Oh yeah. I mean, we're gonna have people jumping off bridge, like wanting to jump off bridges watching Illinois play in some of these preseason tournaments, and I think they're gonna look better.
I think that just
February and March.
Don't you think though, Coach Underwood just kind of laughs at that stuff when people are all upset?
I got a plan. I know it. Like, I don't think, and I know it. I think there's going to be a part of the year where I know it, Brad Underwood's going to be frustrated with fans because he's going to go, look, you guys don't get this. Like, I don't know if he can even say it this way, but like, I'd like for him to. I don't think he cares about what the team looks like until after New Year's Day. I really don't, because he's all trying to put together the pieces of the puzzle at that moment. But I think that's going to be the most interesting part of this team, is that what this team's going to look like pretty much after New Year's Day, because I think it could look really, really, you know, scatterbrained and scary bad, like early on, just because of who they're playing against and how many of those guys are back and know what they're doing and have the same system. And all these guys are trying to put together the puzzle pieces, like in this Turkey weekend tournament and like the bragging rights game and all this stuff that they're going to play like before New Year's Day. That's not setting up this team to go 13-0 to start right out of the box before you get to the big part of your Big Ten schedule.
Yeah, I see this team. You know, again, like I said, this team's got a lot of talent, so they can win. But everybody's got to figure out what they're doing and figure out their teammate. When you got a new offense, new teammates, new defense, you know, learning how people help and all the things that go. And then they put some very talented teams, you know, in front of you in Las Vegas or wherever, you know, Madison Square Garden. There can be some learning moments that are uncomfortable. And to me, it seems like Coach Underwood really focuses on kicking Big Ten butt. And so he's going to try to get those pieces together so that the puzzle's complete in January, not necessarily rush and try to get all the pieces in the right spots in November. And I think there's going to be some Illini fans that are going to be a little, you know, a little bit teary eyed early on in the season. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, that's to be expected. I'll tell you what, sitting here and listening to both of you talk, I mean, if you are an Illinois fan, you know, and I don't know how, I'm not going to put you guys on the spot because I don't know how much you know about all the other rosters. But if you look at the favorite, you know, most people are picking Indiana, you know, because I think because Jackson's coming back. But if you really, really, really think about it and look at the talent, not, you know, based on what's been done, but you look at the talent, how can anybody say, and everybody has all the high expectations for RJ Melendez, and you got a five-star guard coming in, and then you bring in two of the top five transfers in the country who play at high, high level of basketball, and one's in the Final Four. How can you not pick Illinois to win the Big Ten just based off a roster alone? This is why, like, some of these places, like I use, you know, we talked earlier in our group text about this one company, they do their homework. They don't just go out there and say, okay, they lost Kofi, so now Illinois is going to stink again. There's more to it than that. You're going to bring in two transfer guys that are legit, not just guys who, I can tell you this, there's no way that both of those guys will not average 10, 12, 14 points a game, both of them. They're two good players. They're going to get there. And if you have any kind of production from any other players, which from my understanding that it is different, I don't know how people can just pick against them. But I guess what I said earlier, they need to advance in a tournament. You know, they need to continue to put guys in the roster, but that's what everybody's going to look at. They're going to look at that entire, what have you done for me lately? Because when Brad Underwood advances to that second round of the tournament, what can you say? There's nothing else you can say. The guy's been in 5-6 years, won a Big Ten tournament, Big Ten championship, and he put one guy in the NBA. He's had two All-Americans. He's getting it done.
Ken, I think if you're asking me to play the devil's advocate side of this, like, I think the answer is
we don't usually have to ask you to do that, man.
I know, yeah, but if you're picking Illinois, you're picking a team that lost all five starters from last year's team. Sure. If you're looking at it from like a, hey, you have to do a, you know, a mea culpa when you pick Illinois because you're like, but. You guys don't know it yet, but there's a lot of you guys don't know it yet, but with Illinois. Like, I think with Indiana, and when you do these stuff, it's like,
okay. Yeah, but Indiana can't shoot in a game of basketball. That
no, just, I get it. But a lot of people have seen Trayce Jackson-Davis
do what?
Be a dominant all Big Ten big. Like, seen it. And oh, by the way, Illinois fans have only not seen it because there's been that two, like 7 foot, 300 pound dude that he can't get past, like, in those games. Like,
although he's strong, I mean, like I said,
don't involve Kofi Coburn. Trayce has been pretty good. Like, and so there's a lot of those that Indiana's got back that you can go. And oh, by the way, if you're bringing in the number one ranked recruiting class in the country along with these pieces, I don't have to do a whole lot of, yeah, you guys have not seen it, but, like, kind of thing with Indiana. I don't have to do that with Michigan as much. I don't have to do, but I have to do it with Illinois because guess what? Underwood's rolling out five new dudes this year. Like,
you know what?
I don't know how that's going to work. Like,
let me ask you this. What do you really think? I mean, like, and I could be, this is me taking off my media hat right now. Do you think there's some favoritism with some of these schools? Because here's why I say that, Matt. You know, Duke is Duke, and we have all seen I'm having a brain cramp, the kid that just transferred to Duke from Illinois.
Jacob Granderson.
Yes, Jacob Granderson. He commits to Duke, and instantly all you hear, oh my gosh, Jacob Granderson just committed to Duke, so they're certainly going to be a top two team, a Final Four team.
I know.
I mean, this is because it's Duke. You know what I'm saying to you? But yeah, you have a guy you and I both know. You know, love Jacob Granderson, mature guy, great with the media, good with, you know, with the game. But he's no Terrence Shannon. He's not even in the same league. But that's what you get when you get some of these schools, I guess. So to me, it's because like Michigan. Michigan has just been given gifts. I think they've lost a lot. A lot of people are still picking them to win it. I think they'll do well in the tournament just because they have a roster built for it. But some of these schools are just, I think they're given gifts because
there's a lot of difference there, kids, I think, though. But like, for instance, Michigan, what have they been to the Sweet 16? Like 7 years in a row.
Which is nice. Can't argue that.
Yeah, and so I think I actually understand why Michigan's given the benefit of the doubt is because when it comes to tournament time, you know, they're lucky they haven't got the Loyola Houston draw. But the bottom line is they make it to the Sweet 16. They get that week of media coverage, and you have to do that to build a program. Illinois hasn't done that yet.
Correct.
Duke is Duke, you know, I mean, you know, they suck and yet they can still make Final Four runs or, you know, Elite Eight runs, you know, on a regular basis. The team that is the biggest wannabe of all time is there's a group of fans who really believe Indiana is the Indiana of Robert Montgomery Knight of 25, 30 years ago. And they haven't been that since 10 years before Knight left. And they had, you know, one or two good years. But, I mean, I'm telling you right now, the coach who I would be terrified if I was Indiana to play next year is Boeheim with that 2-3 zone. Because they aren't going to get easy inside shots against that. And they can't shoot from outside until they prove it.
Yeah, two things. One is that, kid, I don't mean to name drop, but, like, I remember reading the piece when Jacob transferred to Duke. And Gary Parrish literally wrote the piece. I had Duke at two. I'm not going to put him at one because now they got Jacob Granderson because I don't think they're better than Gonzaga. But he already had Duke at two before they got Jacob Granderson. And that's because Duke brings in, you know, Duke. NBA players every year. Like, no, it's not just because it's Duke. Because if you watch the NBA draft, like
Duke this year they've done well.
Right. Like, so like, if, again, but like Kay set that, Mike can tell you this and you should, and you can too. Like Kay set that last recruiting class that he was never going to coach at pretty darn well too. Like, so the idea, like, so they're going to bring in potential projected NBA guys again. So like, I don't think the Granderson thing. So, I mean, to answer your question, Ked, like, I think that gets blown out of proportion by Illinois fans, just like it gets blown out of proportion by a lot of fans who think their school ought to be rated higher, to be honest.
And there may be a little bit, but Illinois, I lived through the 80s, and Illinois had to live with being an underachiever in the NCAA tournament, which
right,
you can argue they were, and so now we're going through that phase again, and the last time when Lou Henson finally shattered that, you know, he got put on probation for nothing. And so Underwood is about ready. I feel like we're on the verge of taking a hammer and just shattering that glass ceiling over the Illini program. And, you know, as long as things, you know, you don't have a hit job by Bruce Pearl, Bobby Knight, and Digger Phelps, Illinois should be fine. And then we'll see what that can elevate to.
Yeah, I think the good news for Illinois, especially early on if they struggle, is that I think based on all the preseason stuff that I've seen is that like the top of the Big Ten isn't nearly as good because of all the talent they got that walked out the door this year. So if Illinois is trying to put the pieces together before New Year's Day, I think this is the year to do it because you're not going to be significantly, I think, you know, so far behind when you start this race, Big Ten race, and trying to put your team together compared to everybody else. Like if you're Gary Parrish and you think Indiana is the best team in the Big Ten, which he does, he has them nationally 16th. So the highest ranked big team in the Big Ten this year on Gary Parrish's top 25 and one is 16th. So that tells me the top of the Big Ten isn't nearly as good as it has been in the past. And
the key is Illinois has a roster that potentially, because you got to, the season starts and then potential goes out the window, but potentially this team is as deep as any team since the 89 team. I mean, they've got talent and again, but you got to play up to that level. And isn't that the key that a college coach has to get out of everybody. So now let's, we kind of wrapped up. We kind of hit all sorts of things there. I got a couple of quick questions I want to get answers from you guys on. So I'm reading all these people trying to say that this five-star quarterback, if his last name wasn't Manning, he wouldn't even be any higher than a three-star quarterback. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, Matt, you obviously follow, you know, sure. The SEC much, much tighter, you know, sure. than most people do. And you're watching in your job across the whole gamut of college football. What do you think of Arch Manning and how many stars would you give him? Is this hyperbole, just everybody getting mad at a guy who's got a last name that everybody's jealous, or is he not that good? And then Ked, I'll loop around to your thoughts.
Is he not that good? No, he is very, very good. I tend to flip it on people when they talk about Arch. There's two things that you need to understand about Arch. One is that I tend to think that his last name and everything that he's been able to be around, like with his uncles and his grandfather, help him. They don't hurt him, they help him. And I don't know, why would we expect somebody who's seen it be great and knows what it takes to be great and been around people who are great his whole life and then is willing to put the work in, why wouldn't you expect him to be great too? Like, I mean, that's not the genetics part of it. That's literally the conditioned part of it, right? And so the second thing is that when you look at Arch's tape at Archbishop, the Archbishop Newman, the private school that he's in Louisiana, in New Orleans, that Peyton went through, that Eli went through, he is getting the crap knocked out of him on every play, every single play. And I know he's not playing against unbelievable competition in his division in Louisiana, but he is getting the absolute crap knocked out of him on every play. So one, I know he's tough, and two, he still is delivering results at that school and still making quality throws at that school. And he's still making mistakes at that school, by the way. And I don't think him having to suffer adversity where at the school that he's at and having to play at another level to lift his teammates, which probably he doesn't have that many D1 guys on his team, lift his teammates up is necessarily a bad thing. So I understand the take that if he was Arch Stevens or Arch Cagley, he probably would be the number one ranked kid in the country. But I'm guessing he'd probably still be at least a low five, maybe even a high four, low five star kid. He'd be at the Elite 11 camp if he chose to. And that's the last thing that I think that people get confused about Arch is, well, he didn't go to Elite 11. He's not going to these major camps. He didn't have to.
Yeah, I was gonna say he's
already. He didn't have to. He banked the idea that he was number one kid in the country. So all I'm gonna do is get scrutinized even more if I go to this stuff. So what I was proud of is, like, he, his dad, Cooper, and Archie and his uncles came up with a plan for this young man and executed it flawlessly. And then I also think that he's got the leadership skills because of all of the stuff that Ked sees all the time covering recruiting, I see all the time covering football recruiting. How did Arch Manning announce his commitment? It was a simple tweet on like a noon to Saturday when he knew nobody was paying attention. Oh, by the way, I'm going to Texas. Like, yeah. I don't really want to take any more issues.
For
like,
nine figures. What was it, nine figures?
Right, it's not a big figures? Deal. But like that didn't even like, but that's not a big deal. Like, here, I'm going to Texas.
Yeah, I'm going like, to Texas.
I'm not
going to
do this.
I now yeah, own
I'm
an
not
oil company.
It on Instagram Live. I'm not doing a big press conference. I'm not doing all that. I'm not going to take any questions about why I picked school X over school X. I'm just going to tweet out a picture of me in a Texas shirt and we're good. Like, yeah. I think the underplaying of the recruitment, like, you know, show me stuff, like, shows me that he's more interested in playing football than he is in, like, you know, the rat race of recruiting, which a lot of people roll their eyes on. So, yeah, I don't know if he's going to be as good as his uncles, but I think he'll be pretty special. And I do think that Texas fans have a lot to look forward to, especially with a guy like Steve Sarkisian, like being able to execute and help him throughout this long way, because he's helped a lot of quarterbacks get a lot better.
Well, Ked, do you have any thoughts on Arch?
Yeah, just, you know, real quick. Well, first of all, I think Texas is getting a, a, a great high school prospect. I really do. I don't, Mike, to answer your question, I don't think his family has a lot to do with the rankings because there's a lot of players. I mean, we're talking apples and oranges here, but like you, we can all argue the greatest player of all time is Michael Jordan. Well, one of his sons went to the University of Illinois and he could barely see the floor, you know. But so I guess what I'm saying is I think this kid, he's a five-star recruit, no one player in the country. I think he deserves what he gets. And I don't think, and there's too many people, if you're looking at stars, there's too many people that have a say-so when you do these recruiting. So it's not like one or two people. I mean, a lot of these recruiting services, 10 or 15 or 20 people who are making these decisions. So to make a short answer, to be real brief and not drag this on, to be honest with you, I think it's deserving. And I will say this as a joke, but I kind of mean it. And I know Matt's going to laugh. If he's a five-star recruit, but if this kid would have committed to Illinois, he probably would have dropped to a four.
Yeah, well, you know, Illinois does that to people. So now we're going to go one, and this one may be a little one that Matt doesn't have quite as much familiarity with. Ken, I'm going to let you go first on this. So we got a lot of Illini guys fans who are, you know, guy movie watchers. Thor, Love and Thunder, what were your thoughts?
I loved it. I saw it once, and then I saw it again. What I really, really liked about it, well, you know, when I saw the previews, it looked really cheesy. I didn't like it. I thought, oh, this is kind of cheesy. I wasn't a fan of it, and I don't want to, you know, ruin it for people who haven't seen it. But I liked it. To be honest with you, it's it was the best Thor movie I think he's made. And I'm going into it because I read comments about it. I saw it on a Friday night, but I read comments, and I'm in a group text message with a bunch of guys who follow Marvels and so in DC, and they kind of had mixed views on it. But to me, what was good, what I liked, was because he was able to fight again, and the ending obviously was great, but then his daughter was in it. I thought that was awesome. I really liked that part of it. I had no idea that that was his daughter. And then now they're going to bring in Zeus's son, Hercules, who's going to have to battle Thor. So I did some research, you know, being a cartoon loser, that they fought like 10 times and they split. So the next one may be even better.
Good, good. Well, this was the first Marvel movie that has come out that I did not go on either the night before it opened or on opening night because I had COVID. For my second round of COVID, I was basically quarantined, so I couldn't go to the movie. And it was painful for me. Of all the Marvel movies that have been out there, I've always been there for opening night. So it was, I went to it. I got to be honest with you. Taika Waititi, he went a little bit campier than what I liked on a couple parts. Mm-hmm. You know, like the leg split, the Van Damme leg split. It was funny. It was funny, yeah. But, you know, just on the edge there for me. But overall, Chris Hemsworth is such a likable dude that even you put Thor into some ridiculous situations and you can't help but laugh, especially especially when he talked about having to clean up the whole mess. And she's like, it's just two plates. I was just crying during that part. But
you know who a guy who's underrated, and my daughter and I, we love this guy, is Cork. He's funny.
Yeah.
Boys and the little side comments that he makes the show. I wish they had a bigger role for him. I love him. I think he's great. I think he's great with Chris.
Yeah, so he go ahead.
From a guy that hasn't seen it, can I ask like two questions?
Mm-hmm.
How is Tessa Thompson? Because she's become like immediately like one of my favorite people if she's in a movie.
She gives a good performance, I thought. Yes. Didn't you, kid?
Oh yeah, I mean, I thought she was good too. I mean, I don't have any negative feedback about her. To be honest,
because her performance in the Creed series, like immediately, was like, if she's in a movie, I'm probably going to go see it. I don't.
And really Westworld, she was really good in as well.
Yeah, she was. She excellent. Good call. Yeah,
as that VP who finds out, you know, a lot of.
So this movie kind of like makes it seem like they were trying to get me without like. You know, it's not usually my cup of tea, but with the cast that they put together, they were trying to get somebody like me because like I was
I'm usually all in if Tessa Thompson's in something. Jamie Alexander was Jane in Blind Spot.
Yeah, so exactly.
I'm a huge fan of her. And I agree with what Mike said about Chris Hemsworth. Like if he's in something, I'll usually probably watch.
Well, we got a few minutes of the Guardians. So okay. you know Chris Pratt's hilarious. They got Batista to put on the makeup again. So that was fun. And I'll be honest with you, they did not, unfortunately, Gore, the bad guy, if you're a comic collector, the God Butcher, he was Christian Bale did excellent work in the movie, but the comic book, he was much scarier, and they didn't really go for that scariness. Because basically, he goes around executing, gods across the galaxy because the gods that he worshiped didn't help him and his family and civilization died. And so he gets a weapon that, allows him to kill gods. And he's like, well, this is good because now I know what I'm going to do. The biggest issue I had with the movie was the campiness of Zeus. And I got to give Russell Crowe credit.
Good point.
Russell Crowe is... He's one of the few guys who's gotten fatter than I have. So that's awesome. So I like him for that. But the fact of the matter is that he plays in the comic books and in mythology, Zeus is, kind of a badass, a little bit morally, has some issues morally because, he pretty much tries to, get romantic with any possible person that he can. But that being said, it was hard to take Zeus seriously when he's supposed to be a king of the gods, a counterpart of Odin,
and singing and dancing like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly. And this was if Zeus, got together with Allen Iverson or something. I was just like, holy cow, what are we doing here? But so I didn't like the Zeus character. I really thought though, the special effects around Omnipotent City, which was fantastic in the comic books, and it is excellent in the movie. And that scene was really good. Also, if you're watching the final fight scene, take a look at the figureheads on the side. There's three statues along the right and left side, and you see some fantastic characters. If you're a Marvel geek, which I am, got 25 long boxes at home, and my brother and I wrote comics back in the 90s. But you've got people like the Living Tribunal were up on the wall. The Watcher was up there, so it was really kind of cool. If you go to the movie again and you see that final scene with the guys on the wall, take a look at them because it's kind of a nice gesture back to the comic books of Jack Kirby back in the day. Really cool stuff. Anything else, Ked, on the Thor front?
No, but I would tell you just real quick. You've seen it once, you go twice because you miss a lot of things. I think, and you always pick up because Marvel's is just doing like that. I think they're great. You're right. I've seen everything opening night when they go. I still watch them. I have tons of them that are saved on my DVR. But I mean, when you go back the second night, I think you pick up stuff, like I said. But also, I'm really, really, you always wait for the credits, but I'm really excited to see the possibility of Hercules and Thor go at it. I don't know when that's supposed to come out. I Googled it and I didn't see anything, but that is going to be awesome.
Yeah, is in the comic books, probably from literally the beginning on till just the last 5 years, Thor was always significantly stronger than Hercules. And then in the last 5 years, they've really amped Hercules up to where he can give Thor a battle. So it should be entertaining. Now, you know who plays Hercules? The guy who plays the cussing soccer player on Ted Lasso.
Yeah, I saw it.
And so if you like Ted Lasso, you see this guy, I don't know how you're going to get Hemsworth and him together without a lot of that Lord of the Rings camera angles, because that dude's about 5'6" and Hemsworth like 6'4". But it should be a classic Marvel battle.
Did they not tease, like, in the post credits, like, that Idris Elba is going to somehow be in this next movie? Is that not?
Well, let's just say that Valhalla was shown, and that's okay. Where gods go who die in battle in Norse mythology. So whether they're living or not is really kind of a weird thing, because it's kind of like they've got a place that they can be at, but they're not really part of the living world. It's really kind of a mind blowing thing to try to figure out exactly how that works. But it gives you the option. What?
Do you think Loki's up there?
No, because I think he's, you know, lost in time trying to figure out Kang. So
That's gonna be another one. That's another one. It's time for another show, but he's supposed to be really tough.
Well, and I'll tell you what, that Kang is one of my five favorite Marvel villains.
Is he really?
Oh, yeah, he's a time traveler. He's fantastic. Started off, you know, the Fantastic Four fought him, you know, back in the age of the Pharaohs, because he went back in time. And then, you know, he came forward in time and went to the 40th century, conquered the universe, called himself Kang the Conqueror. Then later on, he goes even further in time and becomes Immortus, a guy who's in control of Limbo. I mean, that guy's got, like, he's got so many different things they can do with Kang. And that Loki series was wonderful because they just started scratching the surface.
Yeah.
And that was the best stuff I think Marvel has done since the Avengers, was that Loki.
All I know is that if the next Marvel movie, and I'm going to go see this one, but if the next Marvel movie has my guy Stringer Bell from the greatest show that's ever been produced in the history of television, like, then they've already got me. Like, I'll be there on opening night if Idris Elba's in there at some point.
Well, somehow. The next one's going to be Black Panther 2, I think.
Okay, well, there it is.
Yep. And that's in November.
That's in November,
I'm a little bit, yeah, I was really hoping, I'll be honest with you, I hope they would recast the Black Panther or talk, what's his name, Michael B. Jordan into...
Yeah.
Taken over. I'm not real sold on this Shuri gal becoming the Black Panther, but we'll just have to see. It may be really good. I don't know. One final subject here, and this one we're going to have to be quick on, but it looks like, according to Pete Thamel of ESPN, that the Big 12 and the Pac-12 have stopped their expansion discussions or their merger discussions, which on appearances, coupled with Notre Dame trying to get a single contract from Peacock, it seems to say that this period of moving in the conferences is at a standstill. Matt, 2-minute thoughts on that?
As I was taught as a Midwest Catholic kid growing up, it all revolves around Notre Dame. It always has been and always will. So the nuns and the priests that I grew up having to listen to for a long, long time will be happy at the idea that I'm going on a media podcast and explaining the fact that, yes, the Midwest Christian school that's on NBC every weekend that we can all watch all across the country is the one who moves the needle, and they're the ones that hold all the cards and they're the ones that have all the leverage. So it all revolves around what Notre Dame wants to do first and foremost before anybody else makes another move, I think.
Okay. And Ked, any thoughts that you have?
Well, you know what? Notre Dame makes the most sense, but to be honest with you, like Jim Delaney did for years, I'm sick of begging them. You know what? It makes the most sense. Why would you go to the SEC? And maybe they're afraid of the teams in the Big Ten. Maybe they're afraid if they lose, they'll lose recruits. I don't know what the deal is. I know all of this revolves around money. That's what this is about. I don't blame them, because these schools are going to make a ton of money. But to me, to answer your question too before, I don't know. I mean, we didn't think this was going to happen. And you know what? You never know. I've heard Stanford coming to the Big Ten. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me. But if Notre Dame wants to continue to play the games, just let them play the games. I'm begging them will do. I mean, I don't see the point. The Big Ten is going to be tough. You look at all those teams right now, I don't see the point of having to continue to beg them unless it's going to benefit you financially.
Well, and I'll leave my final thoughts and then we'll wrap this episode up here. Give myself the last word, which I guess I can do sometimes. I think that if there's something going on, we won't know about it until it happens. I think that was the way Texas and Oklahoma was. I think that's obviously USC, UCLA, same way. If there is something where you have Oregon, Washington, or Oregon, Washington, Cal, Stanford, I don't think we'll know about it till they pull the curtain up and say, looky at this. If I was Kevin Warren, I would be negotiating several different ways. I would say, give me the big 16, you know, that alignment, how much we can make. And then I would say, how about if we got the four other West Coast teams, how much money will you pay us? And if we get the four West Coast team and Notre Dame, how much will you pay us? And I would just have, you know, different tiers. And then I would basically look at, you know, where do we maximize our dollars per team? And if it's at the current 16 teams, then that's where we stay. I don't sign a deal more than 6 years. And I depend on the team. I depend on my teams doing well to put us in a good place in 6 years.
Hey, so I just got a message. I don't know if you guys saw it or not, but the Big 12 and Pac-12, they've been in negotiation talks. It just came out on Yahoo Sports. So that conversation's over.
Yep. And so we'll see what really happens behind the scenes. It's really hard to tell. So with that, folks, we'd like to thank you so much for listening to this show. Of course, Illini Guys Sports Spectacular is our weekly radio show you can find across the state of Illinois. Go to IlliniGuys.com and then look for the radio button to find what city, what day, and what time you can find it. We also have the Sturdy for 30 podcast along with Ked's Recruiting Roundup that is also there. And, of course, if you want to know the inside information on Illinois sports, go to IlliniGuys.com. Sign up for a membership. You have 7 days before you get charged, so it gives you a time to kick the tires. If you do that, please go back into the message boards and read and find out all the things that are going on that we can't report on. With that, this is Mike Kegley thanking Matt Stevens and Kedrick Prince for your time, and we will talk to you later, Illini fans. Thank you.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Save big at Menards. Discovering the perfect paint for your home has never been easier with Zinsser's Smart Coat. Plan smart with interactive tools at SmartCoat.com. Buy smart, in-store or online, for home delivery. And paint smart with this advanced paint and primer in one. Save big on Zinsser's Smart Coat at Menards. America's number one home improvement retailer for customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. For J.D. Power 2024 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Save big.